The signing of the Declaration of Independence represented a high watermark in the history of medical representation in American political leadership. Despite the proliferation of nationally important issues on which policy decisions could benefit from medical expertise today, physicians have largely stepped back from the prominent roles they played during the American Revolution. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Justin Barr, a transplant surgeon at the Ochsner Clinic and a historian. Dr. Barr has co-authored a perspective article about the history of physician engagement in U.S. politics as part of a series of articles exploring the roles of physicians, medicine, and disease in the American Revolution at its 250th anniversary. Dr. Barr, as you write in your perspective article, five of the 56 signatories of the Declaration of Independence were doctors, including Benjamin Rush, the only one with a formal medical degree. So what influence did Rush have on the independence movement and on medical culture?
It's difficult to overstate the impact that Rush had on the early independence movement. He was a renowned genius with almost total recall, graduated from Princeton at the age of 14 before apprenticing to John Redmond, arguably the most famous American physician in Philadelphia, and getting his medical degree at Edinburgh, and then walking the wards with the likes of William Hunter in London and John Pringle, the founder of military medicine, and then came back to be professor at what is now Penn Medical School, the only medical school at the time in the colonies. And he rose in both medical and political circles in colonial Philadelphia. In the early 1770s, he was actually quite young and junior compared to men like Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, who were about a decade older than Rush. But Rush had this keen sense of personality and was able really to see into the individuals, into their lives, into their motivations and perspectives, and help guide particularly the Boston delegation, who was very much in favor of independence at a time when the rest of the country had not yet come around to that idea, into how to negotiate the delicate political maneuvers to slowly move this country towards independence. He later encouraged in 1775 Thomas Paine to write Common Sense, actually suggesting the title, which was arguably the most influential tract that swayed many colonists to support independence. He served in the military during the American Revolutionary War. In 1777, William Shippen, another professor at what was Penn Medical School, became Surgeon General and instituted a reform bill that established these geographic commands of sub-surgeon generals. And Benjamin Rush was appointed to be the Surgeon General of the Middle Department. He actually served in combat at the Battle of Trenton, the Battle of Princeton, was captured briefly by the British at the Battle of Brandywine, although ultimately resigned his commission after criticizing George Washington. And of course, in 1776, as a member of the Continental Congress, he was one of the 56 signatories to the Declaration of Independence, helping champion that document through the political negotiations necessary. So he had a critical role on the birth of this country.
So how did he view the relationship between politics and medicine?
As directly intertwined. He believed, and he was a great example of this, the epitome of this, that physicians were social leaders, that they had the education, they had the wherewithal, they had the respect of their community members to take leadership positions in society, and that they not only had this opportunity, but they had this responsibility to provide assistance, not just to the birth of babies, but to the birth of this new country. And he saw the United States as a unique political experiment, and also saw it as a unique medical institution. At the time, medical ideas revolved around this idea of localism, where diseases were different depending on the locale in which the patient lived. And he thought there was a very specific American set of conditions and diseases that would be treated by a specific American medical theories. And this aligned with his idea, again, of America being this unique political experiment, requiring this unique structure, documents, constitution that would help guide this country forward. And so the two ideas clearly mixed in his writing and his thinking.
And then what roles did the other four physician signers have in both U.S. politics and the medical profession?
So they had important roles at the time, but are certainly less remembered than Benjamin Rush is today. Josiah Bartlett was actually the second person to sign the Declaration of Independence after John Hancock, held a number of political responsibilities. He was Chief Justice of New Hampshire Supreme Court, and became the first chief executive of New Hampshire. It was initially called the president and then later became called the governor. He actually continued to be a practicing medical physician for almost 40 years, helping found the New Hampshire Medical Society, publishing on the use of Peruvian bark, which today now includes quinine as a treatment for diphtheria. Matthew Thornton, also from New Hampshire, was actually the second to last person to sign the Declaration of Independence. Born in Ireland, immigrated to the United States, trained in medicine, and practiced in Londonderry, New Hampshire, served in a number of prominent positions before the revolution, including justice of the peace, surgeon to the local militia, and was a colonel in the militia during the war. He presided over the New Hampshire Provincial Congress, was elected to the Continental Congress in 1776, actually arriving in November, long after the declaration had been initially signed and the debates had concluded. He stopped practicing medicine in 1780 and instead pursued political positions, including a judgeship on the New Hampshire Supreme Court. Lyman Hall was a Connecticut Yankee who trained first in ministry, although was somewhat defrocked of his first pulpit for, quote, moral indiscretions, and turned to medicine, eventually making his way down to Georgia, which at the time was a prominent loyalist state. And he worked really hard on convincing Georgia that the correct path was moving towards independence, and convinced his district to send him as a delegate to the Continental Congress, arriving in 1775 and signing the Declaration in 1776. After the war, he returned to Georgia, where he became governor, and was a key figure in advocating for the creation of a state university, now the University of Georgia, which still has a Lyman Hall in his honor. And then the last man, Oliver Wolcott, some historians don't consider him a true physician signer. He completed 2 years of apprenticeship in medicine, but never seemed to practice, or at least practice for a long period of time, instead moving into a variety of political positions, including sheriff, rising to the rank of major general in the local militia during the war, engaging in several campaigns, including the Battle of Saratoga. He was also elected to the Continental Congress in 1775, was sick actually in 1776 and didn't sign the Declaration until sometime after. Following the conclusion of the war, he continued his rise in politics, serving on the Connecticut Supreme Court, and later as governor, an office in which he actually died.
How did those physician signers approach the institution of slavery, and how did their views related to slavery affect their political and medical work?
So the majority of the signers of the Declaration of Independence owned slaves, and the physicians who signed the Declaration of Independence were no exception to that rule. Rush's father actually died when he was around 5 and a half, and he was raised by at least one, if not two, slaves that his mother had to sell in order to make ends meet. And later in his life, he actually bought, although later manumitted, a slave. Despite that fact, he was one of the staunchest abolitionists in the early American era and advocated for the education of African Americans. And importantly, at that time, from a medical and scientific perspective, argued that there was no medical or physiological or physical difference between the white and the black races and that they should be treated equally, helping found and fund actually the first two black church congregations in the city of Philadelphia. In contrast, Lyman Hall from Georgia also owned slaves and was pro-slavery. He actually took out a clause that had been written into the Declaration of Independence that had been criticizing King George III for his continued support of the slave trade. Of the others, Bartlett and Wolcott are known to have owned slaves, although Wolcott did free his slave later in his life.
You write that despite the prominent positions that these physician signers achieved in American political history, subsequent generations of physicians have largely abandoned these roles, with some exceptions. So how did physicians influence U.S. politics in the generations after the Revolution?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's really interesting. It's difficult to overstate the impact that physicians had on the American Revolution and the early American Republic, not just these five signers of the Declaration, but men like General Mercer, who died at the Battle of Princeton, men like Joseph Warren, of course, famous in your town of Boston. In fact, three out of the first six secretaries of war in the United States were actually trained physicians in the American Revolution. And that role surprisingly faded. And there was an analysis in JAMA in 1983 that showed that 1889 was really, for reasons that are a little bit unclear, the dividing point where around 5% of U.S. Congress were physicians before then, and around 1% of U.S. Congress was made up of physicians after that. And it's fascinating that is roughly around the time when allopathic medicine rose really to prominence as treatments became more reliable and doctors rose in the esteem for their medical abilities to a significant extent, obviously increasing in the early 20th century with the advent of antibiotics and public health measures and other treatment effects, yet at the same time saw their political power diminish. And so we don't really have a history since the early 19th century of physicians having at least prominent political roles, like you said, with a few exceptions. Instead, I think their influence comes from the outside, from their moral authority, from their ability to write editorials, write books. Benjamin Spock, of course, is an obvious example from the 1960s, and his manuals on both how to raise a children and his anti-war protests. But these are different in the direct execution of the levers of power that physicians were executing or physicians were pulling in the American Revolution time period.
So finally, what are the implications of this sort of gap in physician political involvement? And What do you think the profession's role in political discourse should be going forward?
Well, certainly the number of medical and scientific issues that are confronting this country are innumerable, tremendously important, and frankly, tremendously expensive, whether you're talking about vaccines, public health, the funding of research at our academic institutions, or the creation of some form of federal safety net, Medicare and Medicaid, of medical care to our citizens. And I think not to have the perspective of physicians, the men and women who are going forth and treating these patients, is a real tragedy. I think they bring a personal perspective, a patient-centered perspective that can be lacking in the bureaucracy that is inherent in any form of government. And so I do wish that the medical profession would be able to take on a bigger role. Survey after survey has demonstrated that Americans trust physicians, certainly far more so than they trust politicians, hold them in higher regard. And I think maybe we could capitalize on that esteem in order to rebuild some faith in our government, a faith that has been evaporating for the last several years. And combining this with their personal expertise and with their patient-centered focus, potentially make real changes in how we take care of our citizens.
Thank you, Dr. Barr.